I think I once read that the Jesuits have a saying, give me the child by age 7 and I'll give you the man, or something like that. Well, here's an interesting twist on that. There's been some research suggesting that our money habits are formed by the age of 7. That might come as a big surprise to you. Seems parents and families are the number one influence on children's financial behaviour, which is, well, let's put it this way, hardly a surprise. What we see and hear about money when we're young evidently stays with us for life. Now, according to Rachel Smith, who's the author of Underspent, the best solution is to explain to your kids the importance of making good choices. For example, you wouldn't turn around and say, what, do you think I'm made of money? Instead, you could talk to your children and say something like, well, look, as a family, we need to make choices about how much money we save and how we save. And Rachel Smith, the author of Underspent, who's described as a money-saving expert, joins us on the program right now. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Listen, is this really as simple as you suggest, that if you form really good money habits by age 7, then probably the child is going to carry that through into adult life?
So there's lots of research from kind of universities in the States and the UK that says that children as young as 3 can kind of grasp the financial concepts of like saving and spending. So they understand, you know, you have to buy things, you have to wait sometimes for things, you know, save up. So they're saying that between kind of like 6 and 8, that's when we understand everything about kind of finances. So, you know, if mum and dad are at home every night arguing about money, you know, people are behind with their bills and people are stressed, then obviously kids think, you know, money is a really bad thing. It causes loads of problems. It causes loads of stress. And they take that through into their later life.
Look, something that's often said is that people from affluent families don't have a lot of issues with money, know how to manage their money and do so quite well, simply because they're taught within the family structure how to do it. Whereas arguably people from families who are less affluent, where money's tighter, don't teach their kids about money, which makes it even more difficult for them to understand money. Is there any essential truth in that argument?
Oh, yeah. Lots of people would say, you know, if you're always, you know, going without or saying we have to go without, or, you know, that whole saying of, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, you know, it's better to be happy than rich, which is what lots of people say. And then, you know, people think, oh, well, money's like a really bad thing. It's an evil thing. We can't afford things. We have to go without. It's all really like negative and about kind of scarcity. And then people either go through their adult life, you know, being really frugal and penny pinching and, you know, being having quite negative thoughts about money, or they just go the other way and they just like shopping and spending and in debt all the time.
You've made a really interesting comment there. Can we look at the difference between what we might call being frugal or perhaps being wise with money, as opposed to just being a plain penny pincher, as, you know, somebody who's just stingy for no good reason?
So lots of people say to me, oh, are you frugal? And I actually don't like that word frugal myself, because to me it conjures up, or for lots of people, it conjures up images of, you know, people just sitting around with, you know, in a nasty house with like no carpets, no furniture, eating kind of lentils and having a really boring, dull life. What I talk about is financial security. So having cash in the bank, you know, in case, you know, your car breaks down, you get sick, you get divorced, you lose your job, that kind of thing. And also saving money for a big dream. So lots of people say, oh, I spend, you know, every Saturday and Sunday at Westfield Shopping Centre buying, you know, loads of clothes. You know, I just go there because I don't really know what else to do. But what they really want to do is they want to maybe go on a holiday, or they want to go to TAFE and learn, you know, like a skill, or do like a, you know, an NVQ or Sir Ed or something. I don't know what they want to do. Or they want to pay off their mortgage, or they want to do all of these exciting things. But because they're out spending money all of the time, one, they don't have any money saved, and two, they're not spending them or saving up to spend money on what they really want to spend money on.
Well, moving outside the family influence for just a moment, do you think within the school system people should be taught a bit more about money, and perhaps arguably about finance in general? Because, of course, there are some people who've done very, very well out of life by borrowing money, with a view to a business investment, for example, that turns out to be a very, very good investment that actually sets them up for life, even though in the first instance, they really stuck their neck out financially to do it. So when we look at circumstances like that, and when we perhaps argue that in some cases the education isn't there, should there be more of this sort of stuff focused on within the school system?
So I can't speak for the schooling system here because I don't know. I mean, lots of my friends who are teachers say, oh, yeah, financial education's taught in schools. You know, there's like a bank in the school and people from the bank come in and, you know, help you set up a savings account or whatever. I know I went to school in the UK and we never got taught anything about money and budgeting there. You know, you did like your plain maths and, you know, you learn how to use a calculator, but no one really taught you about, you know, setting up a budget, you get paid, you put some money into savings. I was really lucky that my mum and dad were both entrepreneurs. So my mum had like a fabric shop, my dad had a construction company, my grandparents on both sides were all farmers. So everyone in my family was self-employed. I never knew what it was like to be in a family where you got paid every fortnight or every month. So, you know, my mum and dad both had, you know, ups and downs, but they'd have really good months, they'd have not so good months, and then terrible months. But, you know, I used to sit with my mum and do, you know, bookkeeping and receipts. And, you know, they taught me how, you know, you take money and you put it into like the housekeeping and the bills. You know, my grandma always taught me to have all like the jam jars or the envelope system where you get your money and you, you know, work out what you need to spend it on and you put some money in savings. So, and I guess if you haven't been taught that, you know, when you're, you know, between the ages of 6 and 8 and as a teenager, then you don't have those life skills.
Is there a lot to be said for the old argument where somebody says, well, okay, if you earn $500 a week and spend $480 a week, you're doing okay. Whereas if you earn $5,000 a week but spent $5,100 a week, then you're going to end up with a problem.
So I always say to people, I think it's really good. And, you know, everyone's financial situation isn't the same and everyone's incomings and outcomings aren't the same. But I always say, if you can save between 5 to 20% of what you earn, put it in a long-term savings account, then you've got some, you know, money in the event that something goes wrong. And you've got money for, you know, kind of like your long-term future. So I didn't buy anything in 2014 and save 38% of my take-home pay. You know, so that was a year, you know, I only basically got bought food and Tampax and then experiences. So I still went to the movies, still went horse riding, you know, to reflexology, buying flat white on the way to work, but I didn't buy any stuff. So that was the year that I was able to save, you know, a huge amount of money.
So what you're saying, and this is the important part here, what you're saying is being able to save is not about denial. I guess one of the reasons why saving for a lot of people doesn't look attractive is because they think they have to sit at home and do absolutely nothing, otherwise they're not saving. And I think the message you're trying to get through tonight, Rachel, is that that's not necessarily the case. You can still have the things you like. Like, for example, you mentioned getting a flat white on the way to work. Those are the kind of things that if you get them, you really enjoy them because you kind of appreciate them. I think the one thing that people really fear is this concept that saving could actually mean complete denial of anything.
Yeah, and loads of people said to me, in your year where you didn't buy anything, oh, you must have sat at home looking at plain walls and being really boring. And I was like, no, I've decided that I like horse riding and holidays and having money in the bank more than I like buying, you know, T-shirts and socks and shoes and all of that kind of stuff. So, and actually, lots of people come to me now and they say, actually, I realise I've been spending like $4,000 a year on flat whites and coffees, you know, because lots of people might buy two every day. And actually, I'd like to take my family to Fiji. So now I'm going to stop doing the flat whites because I'm saving to go to Fiji. Other people might say, actually, do you know what? I like the breakfast out on my way to work and I like the flat whites. So I'm not going to buy so many clothes so I can buy the flat whites. So it's just working out what's really important for you. And that's the key thing.
One thing I've noticed, and somebody I knew quite a few years ago, his then girlfriend was one of these people I would have described as a real fashion trendy. She had just about every modern garment you could imagine. But the thing that was a great source of conflict between the two of them, and I've got to say I understood his point, was that she would buy a lot of garments that she ultimately never ended up wearing. And his simple question, which I once again have to say I agreed with Rachel, was, what's the point in buying something that you're not going to wear?
So when I was writing my Understand book, I interviewed hundreds of men and ladies in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and in the States. And they said that the reasons that they shop so much and why they love to shop is they like getting a bargain, but they like the excitement of going to the shops and buying the new clothes and the new shoes and all of those kind of things, like homewares and stuff. And loads of people said, I don't really want those things. I just love the excitement of going to the shops, getting something new, bringing it home. You know, it's all packaged up really nicely. And that's what I like. And actually, one lady did say, sometimes I go to shops and buy loads of clothes, and then the next day I take them back because I've had the excitement of bringing them home.
Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was great.
Rachel Smith, by the way, is the author of Underspent and is a money-saving expert. Now, why on earth would you spend all that time going to the shop to take them back again the next day? Talk about a waste of time.